Last week, I discussed the importance of radio news in the programming scheme of things. I also mentioned personalities who kept radio news alive and kicking. In this episode, I want to zero in on what I believe was a game changer as far as radio news is concerned, especially on FM. Hello, my name is George, and welcome to another episode of Masterclass. We continue with our series on broadcast and how you can be part of it. This is brought to you by Cutprint Productions. AM radio's primary staple has always been news and commentary, spawning the likes of Nolly De Castro, Mike Enriquez, Anthony Taberna, and a host of other hard-hitting on-air personalities. They somehow broke the age-old rule that a newscaster just reads the news and doesn't comment on it. The personalities I mentioned delivered the news, gave the commentaries, and even endorsed products during their shows. Probably the last of the true blue newsreaders was the venerable Joe Taruk of the equally venerable DZRH. When FM radio came alive in the mid-70s, the stations were literally all music. No personalities, hardly any news. The quintessential elevator music, middle-of-the-road programming. During this period, too, the umbrella organization of broadcasters, through the prodding of government, of course, mandated that a minimum number of minutes per day should be devoted to newscasts, no matter what programming you have. A majority of the stations simply inserted 15-minute newscasts in the morning and evening, plus minuters on top of the hour, just to comply with the rules. They were actually rehashes or lifted from the daily newspapers. These newscasts were considered inevitable irritants just to keep your license. Radio station 99.5 RT was one of the most popular stations among the youth, and it was unthinkable that news should interrupt the seamless mix of music that they were offering. But they had to toe the line, so program director cum station manager Mike Pedero thought of a novel way of delivering the news, keeping in mind that its audience was the youth. He recruited pleasant-voiced, fluent news ladies to deliver the news that piqued the youth's interest. Hourly newscasts were scheduled at the 55th minute mark for a very ingenious reason. While all other stations were doing news at the top of the hour, RT would already be wrapping up its news and playing a very popular tune at the top of the hour, thus getting ahead of the competition and playing music. Of course, it helped a lot that newsreaders like Vicky Nevera, erstwhile twin sister of Martin, was one of the newscasters. It also saw the emergence of a new breed of newscasters, pleasant to listen to, conversational, and giving relevant news to its target audience. Never has it been done before, an all-female news-presenting team. And it worked. Names such as Pinky, Lindy, Claire, Rosella, Dada, and many more became familiar to listeners and even gave birth to a new fan base. In 1979, RT hired Englishman Harry Pound to augment its news team as the only male member. What made it different from other stations? Harry was the first FM on-the-spot reporter. He was where the action is, mostly concerts and music events, and brought his trusty recorder with him. He, however, couldn't broadcast live. He didn't have the facilities to do that. So he had to bring all his recorded material, edit them, and air them in an evening wrap-up of the news. That set the trend for FM news. In 1982, I had just reformatted WLS of the GMA network to become a true blue top 40 facility. Still, the news regulation was a concern. We had to think of a novel way to counter what RT had. Sure, we had a muscle of GMA News, then the most credible news organization, but we were stuck in its old school methods. They simply gave us news materials that were aired on TV. In other words, rehashes. If we were going to do that, we'd never overtake those RT news hands. They even had a live traffic chopper report with a live traffic angel named Pia Guanyo. Her face matched her voice and delivery. A perfect 10, and she instantly got a slew of fans. Now, those were the times when traffic was beginning to become a daily hell for commuters and motorists. I recall the daily traffic program aired on a government station during the height of martial law. It was handled by an advocacy group called the Citizens Traffic Action. They were actually a bunch of hobbyists who gave live traffic reports on their way to work. And it made sense. They took several different routes daily and were able to deliver up-to-date traffic situationers from all corners of the metro. Not as fancy as a chopper report, but it was more immediate, more in touch. In other words, they were really taking it to the streets. And thus was born Taking It to the Streets, with apologies to the Doobie Brothers. These were 5-minute traffic reports every 15 minutes from 6 a.m. to 10 a.m. and from 4 to 7 p.m. And it soared. Motorists made it a habit to tune in for their traffic guide. It was the precursor of Waze, sort of. It was so successful that we were able to get major sponsors for this segment, and we even snowballed it nationwide in different networks with the help of these sponsors. And it didn't cost us a single peso. Citizens Traffic Action was more than glad to spread their advocacy. The member reporters suddenly felt like instant celebrities. They were on air on prime time every day. How did we do it live? The reporters simply called in to their base, and who in turn patched them through the phone. It sounded legit and credible and huge. In another station, Cool 106, we placed our newscast on the 20-minute mark of the hour. This was again a tactical move because after the 5-minute newscast, we unloaded a 20-minute nonstop dance mix, a segment that listeners looked forward to. We rarely experienced tune-outs since listeners were waiting for the mixes so they could record it on their cassette decks. We had our captive audience. And we packaged the newscasts and dance mixes as a bundle to advertisers so they got their effective cost per spot. Imagine technically and exclusively owning 25 to 30 minutes of airtime with a news and mix package. That was a bargain. With opening and closing billboards, breakers, and their 30-second commercial as segment bumpers. Other networks started being creative with their news presentations. The likes of Love Radio and Yes FM occasionally did simulcasts with their AM counterpart, the pioneer news talk station in the Philippines, DZRH. In fact, it was the first radio station in the Philippines bearing the name KZRH when we were still under American rule. Since we were west of the Mississippi, our call letters had to start with a K, just like stations in the U.S. West Coast. It wasn't after the country gained independence when we finally got our own set of call letter designations. DZ and DW for Luzon, DY for Visayas, and DX for Mindanao. That's another story we're going to discuss when we go to engineering in this broadcast series. Bombo Radio, a nationwide network of AM and FM stations, has a national newscast, giving it a semblance of hugeness, with reports coming in from all over their outlets across the country. No wonder it has consistently bagged media awards for the best newscast. They sounded huge. What then is our takeaway from all these? If you want to be successful in radio, or broadcast for that matter, you have to give an impression of being massive, huge. When that happens, listeners automatically gravitate towards you. After all, people always want to be associated with the big winners and spenders. And when this happens, advertisers come gravitating to you. It's a bandwagon effect, and it always has been the bread and butter of radio. You have to be heard clearly, and what the audience hears should paint a picture in their heads, the theater of the mind. It has to be a total sensory experience for the listener to keep on tuning into you day and night. And you do it with all the weapons you can muster in your arsenal. Promos, contests, freebies, gimmicks, interactions, community presence. Think big. Project big. Huge. Next episode, that's what we'll be talking about. How to project big. We'll take a look at some of the successful promos engineered by various radio stations here and abroad. Should be an episode to look forward to. And if you want me to touch on other aspects of broadcast, just send me an email on george@cutbrandproductions.com. That's george@cutbrandproductions.com. I'm sure we can work something out. Just one condition, though. Stay with me every week and tell your friends about a masterclass with George Boone. Always stay safe and sane. Keep wearing that mask and shield and take good care of yourselves. I'll catch you next week. Good night. God bless. Ad maiorem, Dei gloriam. This show is produced by Cutprint Podcast Network and George Boone. Executive producer, Patsy Ferrer. Writer, George Mercado. Creative director, Christine Alido. Social media manager, Nia Escondo. Sound engineer, MJ Habal. Researcher, Lee Malcolm. To advertise, email us at podcast@cutprintproductions.com or call us at 0918-807-8478. That's 0918-807-8478.